Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Welcome to Fruit Loops, episode 229. Buiti binafi and bienvenidos, bitches. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Now, Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and those who are othered and the victims. Because contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight, cisgender, able-bodied, white dudes.
What?
I'm telling you. These crimes rarely get any public attention because the news is racist.
Allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
Hey, guys, it's just us. It's just,
yeah, just part of
just
who we are.
Part of who we are.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions.
All right, so who are we talking about today, Beth?
Today we're talking about Kazuko Fukuda, referred to as the most famous fugitive in Japanese history, and also known as the woman with seven faces.
When I saw that AKA, I immediately was like, Arya Stark!
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. But before we get into Fukuda, how you doing?
I'm doing good this week.
Good, yeah. Good. You love to see it. I love to hear it.
Yes, just getting ready for the next shit show to hit.
Uh-huh. Yes, ma'am.
Right now, I'm enjoying no shit show.
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally know what that feeling is like. Like, oh, things are so good. But but I know they're going to turn to shit really soon. Yeah, something's coming. What do you got now, God? Should I bend over or not? but that's really, really good to hear. I, too, am feeling lighter, happier. I really do think a lot of it is the weather. I do suffer from seasonal depression. I suffer from regular depression, and it just gets way worse in the winter.
And seasonal.
Yeah. So... it's been really nice to get outside and, ride bikes, go for walks, et cetera. All those things really do like help your mental. It's crazy. My therapist has been right this whole time. I just thought she was. I was like, okay, yeah, for sure. Fine. Sure, I'll take a walk. This lady thinks I'm going to go outside.
She was right.
She was right. So now let's get into some listener letters.
hello, angels. Thank you.
Just love that sound. What's in that bag, Beth?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to Susie on Audible for your 5-star review.
Whoa, on Audible?
Yeah, I just realized the other day that there were reviews on there. So really sorry this is late. There's old ones too, but the most recent one was Susie's, and I think she posted it in February. So
a little Susie. Late,
but thank you, Susie.
Thank you. Air horns for Susie.
We love you, Susie. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And we also got an email from Kat J. And Kat said, hi, just wanted to reach out about your podcast and that you did a great job covering some of the underlying causes of violence that many of my clients on death row in Arizona experience. Mm. If you're looking to discuss more of the facts related to some of the cases in Arizona or those who are on death row, please feel free to reach out. And guess what?
What?
We're going to be talking to Kat soon and Yay! Sharing our conversation with y'all in the future.
Yes, Kat, by the way, thank you for reaching out to us. And
yeah,
thank you for the kind words and can't wait to chat more.
Yeah. And if you have any questions or comments, please send them to FruitloopsPod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at
602-935-6294.
And we may feature it on a future episode. But if you don't want us to, just let us know and we won't.
It's that simple. So,
yep.
We don't have any new Patreons this week. But you know what? We have over 200 Patreons. And we are grateful for each and every one of you. I hope that you felt that it's been worth it to get the extra content. Just want to remind everyone, if you head on down to the Patreon, you get merch, you get bonus content, ad-free episodes, and then monthly Fruit Loops happy hours with us. And again, we could not do this show without our fruities, and we couldn't do it without our Patreons, and we just are so, so thankful for you. So hip hop air horns to every last one of you who's rocking with us over there on the Patreon.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into the story when we come back. You know, there are so many amazing movies out right now.
Yeah.
Civil War, Godzilla versus King Kong, Monkey Man, Dune Part 2. Can I get a what, Beth? Deadpool versus Wolverine is also coming out this summer.
Oh, that looks amazing.
I know. And Kingdom of Planet of the Apes. I just can't wait.
And don't forget Furiosa.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So many great movies to see. And the best place to experience them is in the theater.
That is the truth. No lies detected. You can't handle the truth. Now, experience is the best way to put this whole movie thing. I mean, the memorable moments, the getting lost in the stories, the popcorn, the snacks, the drinks, the comfy seats, the company. It is an experience and a magical one at that.
I couldn't agree more. I love going to the movies.
Yeah.
And there's something so special about movies and seeing a film in the theater.
Yeah.
It doesn't compare to anything else, really.
Yeah. Again, no lies. And listen close, Fruit Loops, because we have an offer from Regal Unlimited that you cannot refuse.
We're going to make them an offer that I can't refuse. Regal Cinemas.
That's right. Regal Unlimited is an all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just 2 visits.
Did you say it pays for itself? Oh my gosh, tell me more.
Yeah,
Tell me more.
You can see any standard 2D movie anytime without any blackout dates or restrictions. And if you want to see a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost.
With Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets. You'll also save on snacks.
Woo.
Members get 10% off all non-alcoholic concessions items.
So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, you need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Use promo code FLOOPSREG, that's FLOOPSREG, to let them know that Beth and Wendy sent you.
Again, go to the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited and use promo code FLOOPSREG.
Thanks, Regal Cinemas, for sponsoring the show.
Yay! All right, we're back. Remind us, Beth, who is our perp today?
Today we're talking about Japanese murderer Kazuko Fukuda, who underwent several plastic surgeries over a span of 14 years and used more than 20 identities in order to escape justice.
And she was kind of close. She got close
to
escaping justice.
Very close, yeah.
So now let's get into the love and light section of our show, where we just say love and light to those left behind in the wake of this tragedy who loved the victim and cared for the victim. Also, I mean, you got to think of Fukuda had children. They are also affected by this, etc. So there's many people left in the wake. So we want to say love and light to all those people. And also rest in power to Atsuko Yasuoka, who was 31 years old.
So this subject is not a serial killer, but the story is so fascinating. We
so
had to cover it.
So fascinating.
Yeah.
So now let's get into the setting. We want to lay some context.
Yep.
Hit it, Beth.
Well, the setting is Japan in the 1980s. Japan is an island country located in the Northeast Pacific Ocean, east of Korea, across the Sea of Japan. The Japanese archipelago includes more than 3,000 islands. The four main islands from north to south are, and excuse my pronunciation, Hokkaido, Honshu, Shikoku, and Kyushu. Japan is divided into 47 prefectures, which are similar to states, provinces, or counties.
Now, we've covered Japan in the past, by the way, and it's impossible to cover everything about the setting, but just a little taste. So Japan was settled about 35,000 years ago by Paleolithic people from the Asian mainland. So Japan's history is long. Again, we cannot cover it, but the first era of recorded history in Japan is the Kofun. In 250 to 538 CE, the Kofun were headed by a class of aristocratic warlords. Oh, they adopted many Chinese customs and innovations.
Japan's unique culture developed during the Heian era between 794 and 1185. The Heian period is also considered the peak of Japanese imperial court, noted for its art, especially poetry and literature. The samurai warrior class developed at this time as well.
Samurai lords called shogun took over the government in 1185 and ruled Japan in the name of the emperor until 1868. That is a long time.
Yeah.
He must have been working all right. Anyway, that year, a new constitutional monarchy was established, headed by the Meiji Emperor.
After the Meiji Emperor's death, the emperor's son became the Taisho Emperor. His chronic illnesses kept him away from his duties, which allowed the country's legislature to introduce new democratic reforms. Then during World War I, Japan formalized its rule over Korea and seized control of northern China. Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, we don't talk about it as often, but Japan was a colonial power, a colonizer, essentially.
Yeah.
The Showa Emperor Hirohito oversaw Japan's aggressive expansion during World War II, its surrender, and its rebirth as a modern industrialized nation. Today, Japan has a constitutional monarchy headed by an emperor. The political leader of Japan is the prime minister.
Yeah, so it's similar to the UK in that way.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah. Japan is one of the most advanced countries in the world and is considered a global leader in technological innovation, particularly in robotics, automation, and aerospace exploration. It has the world's fourth largest economy by GDP after the US, China, and Germany.
Wow! We've talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning again that Japanese culture is collectivist, meaning that the well-being of the group is prioritized over the needs of the individual. And this contrasts with individualistic societies like America, which are more common in Western countries.
And the group can be the country, the family, the neighborhood, the company, the school, the prefecture, or any other collections of people with a shared goal. Confucian ideals influence Japan, and Confucian society focuses on the family.
The roles are traditional and similar to Western traditional patriarchal roles. Men are the heads of the household, and women are dependent on the men. Confucian society expects women to marry, produce heirs, and oversee the household.
Gradually, Confucian family ideals shifted. The largest shift happened after World War II, when the Civil Code of 1947 granted women the right to own and inherit property, to marry and divorce freely, and the right to vote and
parental rights. Wow.
I love that.
1947, though.
Yeah.
That's pretty late.
That yeah. is. That, I mean, that's later than us over here. And
yeah.
It, I mean, yeah. wow. So the civil code sought to create equality between the sexes. But despite legal equality in practice, women were not equal. In marriage, men were still expected to be the breadwinners, while women were expected to take care of the home. The jobs available to women were not the same, and men were paid more.
Although this is slowly changing, women are still expected to shoulder most of the burdens of housework, childcare, and elder care. Not unusual.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, no, yeah.
It's the same kind of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I do love that they don't like get rid of their elders.
Oh, yeah.
When they need care, right?
It's yeah, like, they're very family focused.
Right, exactly. Sure. I think that's yeah. really dope.
But this society isn't great for men either. They are expected to be ideal workers, putting the goals of their company first. But married women in Japan increasingly hold part-time and full-time jobs, and sharing of family roles is slowly increasing. Women are also increasingly educated.
Having a baby outside of marriage is uncommon in Japan. It is still considered shameful, and single mothers face economic and social discrimination. By the way, speaking of discrimination against mothers, there are many mixed race, particularly Black mixed race Japanese persons who are like shamed or shunned yeah. within their
yeah.
society.
Right.
Which is interesting and a topic for another day, but I just found out about it. So, but back to the story. Children are almost exclusively birthed within marriage, with only 2.3% of children born to unmarried mothers. By contrast, 40% of births in the United States are to unmarried women. I wonder what
that's crazy.
Is if abortion is legal.
Abortion is legal. I did look into that, but their abortion rate is way lower than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not it. Mm-hmm. They do tend to marry if they get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. that might be part of it. But also, a lot of women don't want to get married, so they may just avoid the situation.
And why
altogether.
Would you, ladies? Am I right?
Yeah. And Japan also has a problem with a low birth rate right now because people don't want to get married.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So compared to the U.S., Japan has exceptionally low levels of crime. In 2011, its intentional homicide rate was 0.3 per 100,000 people, while America's rate was 4.7 per 100,000 people.
Whoa.
In 2013, Japan's gun homicide rate was 0.01 mm-hmm. per 100,000 people, while America's rate was 3.5, or 350 times the rate of Japan's.
Winning! I'm just kidding. That's definitely not a
winning. No.
In the 1980s, the country of Japan was a pretty safe place, even considering the activities of the Yakuza, sometimes called the Japanese Mafia, never heard of them, which was founded in the 17th century and still regarded as being among the most sophisticated, wealthiest, and dangerous criminal organizations in the world.
So your chances of getting murdered in Japan in the 80s were 1 out of 100,000, and about 96% of murders were eventually solved. Because of how safe things were, Japanese police officers would often go out on their patrols totally unarmed and sometimes on bicycles.
I just, as a Black person in America, I cannot imagine a police officer just
that sounds so
hanging
pleasant.
Out with no gun and a bike. What?
Yeah.
So Japan didn't have anything like the FBI either. In fact, some dissatisfied citizens complained that the Yakuza did a better job at fighting crime than the police did. Wow.
Law enforcement in Japan has an above 90% conviction rate. However, Japan's criminal justice system relies heavily on confessions. And as we know, sometimes confessions can be false.
Yeah.
In 2014, confessions underpinned 89% of criminal prosecutions in Japan. And the lack of safeguards for suspects means the system often relies on false confessions.
So that number becomes less impressive.
Yeah.
When you think about that.
Yeah.
Interrogations in Japan can be very stressful, and some suspects will falsely admit guilt just to end a stressful interrogation.
Yeah. We've talked about this before.
We sure have. police may hold ordinary criminal suspects for up to 23 days. That's way more than here.
Yeah.
We only get 48 hours.
Right.
Without a charge. And they don't have access to defense lawyers during this time period.
Prosecutors put pressure on the police to extract confessions. Interrogators sometimes ram tables into a suspect, stamp on his feet, or shout in his ears. Interviews can last for 8 hours or more, and suspects are deprived of sleep and sometimes forced into physically awkward positions. It sounds like torture to me.
Yes, it does. You know, by the way, speaking of torture, I'm listening to that Guantanamo podcast.
That's good.
Gosh. Yeah, but the stuff that they are doing to people.
Horrible.
Anyway, but because murder was so rare, Japanese law about murder could be unusually lenient. The country had a 15-year statute of limitations on murder, meaning that if a murder was committed more than 15 years ago, prosecutors couldn't charge anyone with it, even if the perpetrator confessed. Yeah. So now let's get into the early life of Fukuda. What do you got for us, Beth?
Kazuko Fukuda was born in 1948 in the Japanese city of Matsuyama, the capital city in Ehime Prefecture. Her father abandoned the family when Kazuko was 4 or 5. In order to get by, her mother ended up running a brothel out of their home in Kawano City, now known as Shikokuchuo City in Ehime Prefecture.
Although eventually her mother and a local fisherman married and the family moved to a small island, people found out about her mother's history and Kazuko was teased relentlessly.
When Kazuko was in the 3rd year of junior high school, her mother and stepfather divorced, and mother and daughter moved to Imabari City, Ehime Prefecture. There, Kazuko's mother opened up a strip club.
Wow, she's a real entrepreneur.
She is, yeah.
In Imabari City, the lives of Kazuko and her mother were not only stabilized, they gradually became well off. What is that song?
We've been moving on up.
What is the city?
Imabari City. With a deluxe apartment in the strip
in the
club.
Moving on up. So Kazuko grew into a rebellious girl. She dropped out of school. And by the time she was 18, she was out of the house and living with her boyfriend. So now let's get into the timeline. Hit it, Beth.
In 1966, Fukuda and her boyfriend were arrested for robbery after they robbed the house of the head of the Japan Taxation Agency.
Oh.
She was sent to Matsuyama Prison, located just outside of Matsuyama, about 30 miles from Imabari City.
What happened there would later become known as the Matsuyama Prison Incident. Between 1964 and 1966, members of one of Japan's most powerful organized crime syndicates, the Yakuza, regularly paid off guards to look the other way while they drank, smoked, and gambled.
Worse, they obtained access to the female inmates, who they raped whenever they wanted. And one of their victims was 18-year-old Fukuda.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
And it happens in prisons to incarcerated peoples more often than you might think or like to know about.
Yeah.
So within 2 years, Fukuda was released. And she got married at the age of 20. She divorced the man 5 years later, then married another man the following year. The couple eventually had 4 children.
But Fukuda liked to drink, gamble, and shop. And before long, she was deeply in debt to about 1.5 million yen, which is equal to about $30,000 in today's money.
Oof.
In 1982, Kazuko was 34, the mother of 4 children, and up to her neck in bills.
Mm.
She worked as a hostess at a cabaret in Matsuyama City, Ehime Prefecture.
Now, as a hostess, she was paid to serve and flirt with customers. One perk of the job was that customers were strongly encouraged to buy their hostesses drinks. And Kazuko loved to drink. The job seemed to fit her personality, and it paid better than many jobs available to women at the time. But it didn't pay enough to get her out of debt.
And her work nightlife started taking a toll on her role as a mother and wife. She was also seeing another man on the side, so she had a lot going on.
That is a lot. 4 kids, yeah. 2 men, a job, debt, bills.
I don't know.
I'm overwhelmed.
I don't know how she did that.
I am overwhelmed just thinking about it. In 1982, at the club where Kazuko was working, There were many other hostesses, including one named Atsuko Yasuoka. Atsuko was 31 years old. She was good looking, she was charming, and one of the most popular hostesses in the club where the two worked.
As a single woman, Atsuko was able to live how she wanted, and she did. She had lots of clothing, jewelry, accessories, and money. She seemed happy, stress-free, and everything that Kazuko was not.
Ooh, already I'm feeling jealousy vibes. So Fukuda was, in fact, jealous.
Yeah.
And we know this because she made comments to other coworkers. She decided to make friends with Atsuko. And on August 19th, 1982, Fukuda went to Atsuko's house.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast, Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an evergreen podcast, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one. The one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. A production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.
Now, the only people who know exactly what happened at that house are Fukuda, who is an unreliable narrator, and Atsuko. What we do know is that Fukuda strangled Atsuko to death. So Atsuko can't tell us what happened.
Right. So in any case, after she killed Atsuko, Fukuda called her husband and told him to come to Atsuko's house. When he got there and saw what his wife had done, he started freaking out. Fukuda told her husband that she had lent Atsuko money, and although she had asked her to pay it back multiple times, Atsuko refused to pay it back. So I killed her.
She claimed that she went to Atsuko's house to ask for the money once again, but instead of agreeing to pay her back, Atsuko hit her in the head with an ashtray.
Oh,
what a bitch.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Okay.
Okay, Fukuda.
Ladies. Wow. Okay.
The two then got into a physical fight during which Fukuda strangled Atsuko to death. That's her story. That's what she's gone
with. That's her story. In America, in the United States, we might call that like mutual combat. And so nobody, right? No, if they're both fighting, they
mutual
either, that is a real thing in that police and law enforcement use.
It sounds like a game.
It does.
Mutual combat.
It does, but I'm pretty sure it's real. I've heard, you know, crime people talk about it. Essentially, it means they're both engaged in combat or fighting, and either they both get in trouble or nobody gets in trouble, basically.
Okay.
But right. This isn't that. I'm sorry I said all that. It doesn't really fit here. Anyway, her husband believed her, but urged her to turn herself in, and she refused. Instead, she came up with a plan to cover up the murder and get rid of Atsuko's body. She decided to try and make it look like Atsuko had abandoned her apartment and life and ran away.
In Japanese, this is called johatsu, which literally translates to evaporation, meaning disappearing without leaving any trace. There's another description for a variation of the same phenomenon, yonij, or disappearing into the night, which describes the phenomenon of an entire family disappearing. There are even fly-by-night moving companies that will help you and your family disappear.
What?
It's that common.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, I want one. I want to disappear into the night.
Wow. No, that is really neat. I mean, there might be a market for that here in the United States.
That could be.
Fly by night moving company at your service. So the reasons for the sudden disappearance of people or families in Japan differ. But one factor is that Japanese work culture expects people to work long hours and be constantly productive. I've actually seen like Vice and Vox News photos and articles.
Yeah,
with just people, men who've worked so long and so hard at the office, just pass out on the street.
Wow.
Yeah. And so sometimes even up until the point of death from overwork, a phenomenon called karoshi. And people who die by suicide due to mental stress are called karoji satsu.
So rather than falling victim to karoshi or karoji satsu, sometimes people will just disappear and start again somewhere else. Other reasons might be the loss of a job or poor performance on exams. In Japanese culture, as we mentioned earlier, honor and respect is very important, and it's a collectivist society. So,
Right. So because of the high emphasis on in-group belonging and affiliation with family and other social networks, dishonoring yourself places Japanese individuals at risk of losing their place in society.
In any case, in order to make it look like Johatsu, Fukuda took all of Atsuko's possessions and hid them at the apartment of her boyfriend. And she got her husband to help her.
Whoa! Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty brazen.
Yeah.
She took cash and more than 300 items, including furniture and a bank book, worth a total of around 9.5 million yen, which was worth somewhere around $40,000 in 1982 dollars. In today's money, that would be over $100,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Also, getting your husband and boyfriend to help you, like, move a body is
Get away with murder.
Yeah. It's so, I can't even get old Whitey to help me put away the dishes, let alone move a body. Ay. So she also convinced her husband to help her dispose of Atsuko's body, as we said. Together, they took her body and dumped it in a mountainous area outside of Matsuyama City. The two felt that because the weather was hot, the body would decompose quickly. So they just threw Atsuko's body into the woods without even burying it.
And on August 24th, 1982, some hikers found a female body swollen by rain in a mountain forest on the outskirts of Matsuyama City, and they notified police. After an investigation and search through records of recent missing persons, the police confirmed that the woman was Atsuko Yasuoka.
The owner of the club where she worked had called the police 3 days earlier, saying that Atsuko had been absent for two consecutive days, and they were unable to get a hold of her. When police went to Atsuko's house, they found that everything was gone. When questioning her co-workers, they learned that Fukuda was one of the last people to see her.
Police phoned Fukuda's house to ask her into the station for questioning. Fukuda pretended to be one of her kids.
Oh, wow. She's really quick on her feet.
She is. And she said her mom would be back shortly.
Wow.
Then after hanging up, she took 600,000 yen, about $3,000 in 80s money, but close to $10,000 in today's money, that she had stolen from Atsuko, and she fled the city.
Kazuko later claimed that she intended to go to Aomori Prefecture, which is a remote part of the country known for its natural beauty. She said, quote, "I was going to atone for my evil deed by going to a sacred area, say a prayer, and end my life. But I got on the wrong train and ended up in Kanazawa," unquote.
A likely story.
I am just saying, I don't know why there isn't a movie yet about this case.
I think there is a Japanese movie, but not one in English.
Oh, man. I wish I would have watched it before this. The twist.
Oh, you wouldn't have been able to understand it because it's in Japanese. So.
It's not dubbed? There's no subtitles?
No.
Oh,
no.
Man. Okay. Well, let's work on that, everybody. So Kanazawa is in Ishikawa Prefecture, about 620 kilometers or 385 miles for Americans from Matsuyama.
When police went to her house to look for her, they found a large amount of gold and silver jewelry stolen from Etsuko. They then arrested her husband and began questioning him. They told him that Fukuda had owed money to many people, including loan sharks.
They also told them that based on the autopsy, it looked like Etsuko had been strangled from behind, and they told him about Fukuda's boyfriend. Faced with all this information, Fukuda's husband broke, and he confessed to his role in Etsuko's murder. He was later charged and convicted of disposing a body.
In the meantime, Fukuda was on the run. Of course, it would be near impossible to run from the police forever. But Fukuda didn't have to run forever. Because of the statute of limitations on murder in Japan, she would just have to avoid capture for 15 years.
15 years. Time me. I'll go now.
You can do it.
Yeah. And that is just so little time. It's really like I've been having a hard time wrapping my mind about just how small of a window that is.
Yeah.
In Kanazawa City, Fukuda initially found it difficult to find work as a hostess due to her age. Hostesses tended to be between the ages of 16 and 30, and Etsuko was in her mid-30s. However, she eventually landed a job at a snack club. What's that? A snack club was just a cheaper, less fancy version of the kind of club that she was used to working at.
She would travel to Osaka via the bullet train, which is like a fast train, to make calls home to her family and friends. She knew her calls would be traced, and it was a deliberate attempt to throw investigators off of her trail.
I don't know this for sure, but I believe she also must have really enjoyed like crime dramas, crime shows, because she is doing the most to not get caught.
Pretty good at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Fukuda decided to go to Tokyo and get some plastic surgery. She had a couple reasons for doing this. One was to change the look of her face to avoid detection by police. The other was to look younger and prettier so she could get better jobs. She would go on to have several more surgeries, which led her to become known as the Woman of Seven Faces in the media.
Around September 1985, while working as a hostess, she began dating a customer who owned a candy shop. She moved in with the man and started working in his candy shop. People who came into the shop seemed to really like her, and she became part of the community. As time went on, Fukuda began feeling more confident and less worried about being discovered.
She even invited one of her sons to come live and work with her at the shop.
Wow.
Yeah. She told her boyfriend that he was her nephew. At the same time, she had been added to Japan's most wanted list, and posters of her were all over Japan.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
When her boyfriend proposed marriage, Fukuda didn't accept for fear of her identity being revealed. Because if they got married, she'd have to produce identification and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What she told her boyfriend is that she was already married and had fled her life because her husband was violent. So she couldn't get married.
He believed her, but his cousin did not. The cousin thought she resembled the infamous Kazuko Fukuda and notified police.
Whoa.
Whoa.
What's going to happen?
We got a rat in the family? I can't marry into this family.
On February 12, 1988, the family was at a funeral when the police showed up. Fukuda saw them before they saw her, and thinking quickly, she took a bicycle and rode it all the way to Nagoya, a distance of around 235 kilometers or 146 miles.
Wow.
And mind you, she was at a funeral, so she was all dressed up.
Wow. Oh my. I'm visualizing this, and it's just wild.
Nuts.
It's wild. It is wild. I don't have any other words. So according to reported sightings, investigations, and her later testimony, she then moved around various areas of Japan, including Hakodate, Aomori, Niigata, and Osaka, where she said she experienced homelessness and lived in a cardboard box. As she moved from place to place, she always worked to stay one step ahead of the police.
In Nagoya, she found a job cleaning love hotels.
Oh!
Yeah. Love hotels in Japan are discreet hotels that customers can pay for by the hour and require no identification.
Mm.
Usually, there's no front desk staff, and customers can go in and out without seeing a single person.
Oh.
I don't know how that works. Is there like a... Do you put money in the...
Maybe. maybe you put money in, like, money in the like vending machine and it keeps
them out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, me too.
So this anonymity was also a benefit for Kazuko, as no one could see her face or recognize her.
During her work at the Love Hotel, one of her colleagues did recognize her from the posters that were posted at the police station and confronted her. They told her to surrender, but once again, Kazuko refused and fled the hotel.
She applied to work at another Love Hotel in Nagoya, but when the application required a photograph and fingerprints, she declined and instead moved to a nearby city called Fukui. But attempting to find work without having identification or a residence was tough, and she ended up working in a brothel in Osaka. And it's my understanding that she was not a sex worker.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But I don't know for sure. I don't know 100%.
Okay. Well, the links will be in the show notes, and you can look further if you want, I suppose. Now, she eventually quit the brothel and moved back to Fukui under another fake name and found a job at a traditional Japanese hot pot restaurant that serves oden, a type of hot soup containing various vegetables and meat. Mmm, sounds so good.
It does. Makes me want some soup.
Yeah, me too. If I were the president, I would make soup available for everyone every day, period.
Hmm.
That's my platform.
That's
Wendy,
your platform.
2024.
Soup for everyone.
Soup for everyone. I love soup so much. I would eat soup for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So once again, feeling comfortable that the police had lost her and she had covered her tracks, she started living her life in Fukui like a normal person, working at the restaurant, drinking at bars, going to karaoke. She was enjoying her freedom.
At one point, a police officer drinking at the restaurant commented to her that she resembled Kazuko Fukuda, the famous fugitive, to which she laughed, pounded her fist on the table, and jokingly demanded that he take her fingerprints. Oh, yeah. And guess what? He didn't. So now we're going to get into the investigation and the arrest. What the what, Beth?
In 1997, police were desperate to find Fukuda before the statute of limitations ran out. So they offered a 1 million yen, about $10,000 reward, for any information that led to her capture. A then unprecedented move. They didn't do that there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, murder wasn't really a problem.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Why would
they? Yeah. And also a prepaid telephone card with her image on it was also issued.
Interesting. So everybody got a phone card with her picture on it?
If they bought a phone card,
wow.
I guess.
Wow.
It would have her picture on it.
That is so smart. That's genius.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Okay. So the Jujin Hospital in Tokyo, where Fukuda received at least one of her operations, also offered a reward. Since, as director, Fumihiko Umezawa told the Washington Post, quote, "Anyone who did a bad thing should have to pay for it," unquote. They may have been ashamed to have played part of her scheme.
Yeah, I think they felt like scammed. You know?
By her. Well, you know, she's kind of a really good scammer. So
she is. She's really good at it.
She's,
I don't know. We always cover these female criminals and we always end up admiring them.
I mean, I don't know why. I really don't know why that is. Like, I couldn't tell you what it is. But I mean, I admire ingenuity. I admire tenacity. And these usually are not traits that are encouraged in girls. Right?
Yeah.
Not in a brazen way. So to diminish the shine of men.
Right. That's true.
I'm sorry, but I really admire it.
Admire
I'm sorry.
It. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I don't admire the murdering part.
I don't admire that.
And everything she did to get away with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating because it's so unusual. Women generally don't do this. And that's because of the patriarchy.
Right. Yeah. So it's hard not to admire it.
Mm-hmm.
And on July 24th, 1997, a customer at the Oden restaurant where Fukuda worked informed police about a woman who resembled Fukuda who worked at the restaurant. Police arrived at around 2 p.m. and questioned her at the restaurant. At the time, Fukuda was using the alias Yukiko Nakamura.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, terror takes center stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.
While drinking beer and eating with the police, wait a minute, she was hanging out with him. Fukuda answered questions, but declined to have her fingerprints taken. However, police got her fingerprints off of the beer bottles she was drinking from during the questioning.
And after 14 years and 344 days on the run, Fukuda was arrested 21 days before the statute of limitations expired.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
The day after her arrest, Fukuda was escorted to the Shinkansen train station in Fukui to be taken by bullet train and overland to the Matsuyama police station in Ehime Prefecture, where the investigation headquarters was located.
14 years and 344 days. 21 days left. Wow. Fukuda was held on either side by police officers with a towel over her head. The press chased after them frantically to get a good position and capture Fukuda's facial expressions. Under the towel, Fukuda was crying. At one point, it was reported that she screamed.
During the interrogation, she at first claimed that she didn't murder Atsuko, but was with the man who killed her, claiming she was just an accomplice. Police looked into the man she mentioned and found that he had already passed away.
The statute of limitations was set to happen in 6 days, and the police needed to prove that the man Fukuda claimed was the killer had an alibi and wasn't involved in the crime. If they couldn't prove that, the prosecution would have a tough time in court.
Talking to relatives of the man, they couldn't recall what the man was doing on August 19th, 1982. Yeah, it was almost 15 years earlier.
It would be tough.
Yeah. But luckily, they did have an old diary that the man had used, and they were able to confirm through his entries that he was, in fact, in Tokyo on business at the time of the murder.
Oh, I don't say this often, but I really love it when police do some good investigating. And this is some good investigating. So Kazuko Fukuda had evaded police for 14 years and 11 months.
No wonder she was crying
and screaming. She didn't make it.
Yeah.
So she was finally charged just hours before the statute of limitations would have run out. Oh my God.
Wow.
I mean, the whole country of Japan is into this, right? It feels OJ Simpson-ish.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now let's get into the trial. What do you got for us, Beth?
So, as you mentioned, Fukuda's story absolutely captivated the public. And at the beginning of her trial, an estimated 1,900 people waited in line to sit in the gallery at the Matsuyama District Court. Mm. And in May of 1999, the court found Fukuda guilty of murder. Although it ruled that the murder was not premeditated, it was found that the robbery was.
Fukuda received a life sentence. She tried to appeal it, this time claiming that she had been in a romantic relationship with Atsuka, and she killed her in a fit of passion when the relationship had soured.
One podcast that I listened to, and I think it was Women in Crime,
uh-huh.
They said something about crimes of passion receiving shorter sentences, so that might be why she claimed that.
Shout out to our pals over at Women in
Crime.
Women
in Crime. But it didn't work. The appeal was rejected by the Supreme Court in 2003.
Wow. So let's get into where are they now? I'll tell you. Although Fukuda escaped capture for many, many, many years, she only ended up serving about 5 years in prison. In February of 2005, she collapsed while working at a factory at the Wekayama prison in Wekayama City. She went into a coma and never regained consciousness. She died of a subarachnoid hemorrhage on March 10th, 2005, at the age of 57. A subarachnoid hemorrhage is when the hemorrhage looks like a spider in your brain.
Therefore, arachnoid.
Thank you. We're smart.
Crime victim groups in Japan pushed to abolish the statute of limitations for serious crimes. And in 2010, Japan's legislature amended the country's criminal procedure law to abolish the statute of limitations for murder and other crimes that result in the deaths of persons.
Wow. So that's it for the story. Now let's get into our takes and thoughts. What do you think about this case, Beth?
Well, I'm sure that her shitty childhood had to have been a factor, you know, the father leaving the family, being poor, watching her mother do whatever she had to do to get by, and being a single mother at that time had to have been really difficult.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she was ashamed. And then, you know, she was arrested and sent to prison. And was raped by those
men.
Yakuza
men.
Yeah. Horrible. So, yeah, she had it rough.
Yeah, that's trauma. And a lot of little traumas and big traumas that add up.
Yeah. All that stuff's going to fuck you up. So I never got a real clear idea of why Fukuda killed Atsuko.
Okay.
She told different versions of what happened. So who knows? She probably was jealous because she told her coworkers things that
jealous. Atsuko sounded like she was living the dream.
Yeah.
Young, beautiful, making money, nice things. I mean, that's what
we all want.
Want. She was a baddie with a bag. And that's my dream in life.
So, yeah, Fukuda probably wanted what Atsuko had. And maybe it was a spur of the moment thing, or maybe she planned it out.
Maybe.
I don't really know.
Yeah.
But as we were talking about, I have to admit that I admire her cunning.
Yep.
She almost got away with murder.
She really did. Almost.
Almost. She was so close.
Yeah. But the stress of all those years of hiding. This is why.
Yeah.
This is why
no thanks.
That's a lot. I'm not surprised she died of a heart attack. I mean, after everything she'd been through.
Or it was a subarachnoid hemorrhage.
Oh, a brain hemorrhage. Her body was weathered, I imagine, from the stress of childhood, the stress of being imprisoned and being violated by all those men, and then being after doing something so heinous and then being on the run and constant, like she could never rest, really.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think at her core, she was a survivor. And that she had to do whatever she could for her survival. I was under the impression that her kids were still around, but I don't, now that we've gone through this, I don't think she had her kids with her at all, which also would have been really, really hard to endure without your babies, right?
You would think so, but nothing I read said anything about that. So I don't really know.
Okay.
I don't know what kind, you know.
Like what kind of mom she was?
Yeah, or, you know, maybe she had a personality disorder. Maybe the kids didn't mean that much to her. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I was curious. I mean, she invited one of them to come stay with her, to be with her, but couldn't really reveal who he was. And so
who he was.
And I just can't imagine being away from my kids.
Not
like that for almost 15 years. That would destroy me. Not worth it.
Yeah.
I think the murder of Atsuko was a combination of jealousy. And when the opportunity presented itself, she took it. And this was in like the 1980s. And I, after going through this entire case, 1,000% sure there was probably a movie or some soap opera that was running on TV with this exact plot. And she,
somebody running the idea, from the police.
Yeah, the idea got in her head, coupled with her knowledge on the statute of limitations. And she was like, yes! and she was like a trailblazer in a weird way, in that she changed the system with regard to the statute of limitations. So I don't know. I think that's significant as far as impact that this case has, is that it changed an entire law that should have been changed a long time ago.
Yeah.
And also, never forget, rest in power to Atsuko, who sounded like she was just the most beautiful person inside and out. And let us know what you think. Your hot takes. You know where to find us.
Yeah.
Now let's get into how not to get murdered.
Okay.
If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
So, how not to get murdered. First step, hop into your bed. Second step, get under your covers. Third step, never leave. Just kidding. I was actually thinking about, I've been thinking about victims and how there's a lot of, we've given a lot of tips on how to prevent, you know, getting harmed and ways you can stay safe, etc. But I was just thinking about ways that we can, as people who like true crime, support victims of crime. And so I found a really great resource, actually a couple, but the victimsofcrime.org. And if you want to donate, there are resources in your immediate area, obviously. But if you donate to victimsofcrime.org, 100% of your gift goes to help people nationwide to ensure that victims of all crime have a network of support so that they can rebuild their lives. And it's not just victims, it's also victims' families, etc. And then I didn't know this, but every single state in the United States gets federal Victims of Crime Act money. So if you have been a victim or you know a victim, tell them about that federal Victims of Crime Act so that they can get victim assistance and compensation.
Wow.
And the link to the victimsofcrime.org will be in the show notes.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything to add, Fred?
Nope.
Okay, well, let's move on. Now it's time to shout out stuff. We're going to shout out any content by or about people of color, by or about any other marginalized or minoritized folks, or any true crime goodies.
All right.
I got dose, too, if you are not bilingual like me. Anyway, Stop the Killing, and it's a podcast on our network, Evergreen Network. What's up?
Yep.
And it is such a detailed and in-depth true crime podcast. They've got recordings from police, body cam audio, interviews, etc. And it's hosted by Catherine Schweit, who's the former head of the active shooter program.
Oh, wow.
With the FBI, by the way. So it's like an important lady.
Wow.
And Sarah Ferris, who's our podcast play cousin. Sarah Ferris. And they offer stories, but also give, you know, how not to get murdered, how to stay safe, actionable advice. And there's a lot of research involved in their show. It's really, really great. So Stop the Killing.
Awesome.
Also, Parallel Justice with Renee Williams is a crime, back to our tips, is a crime by the National Crime Victim Bar Association. So it's attorneys who have fought cases, criminal and civil cases, on behalf of victims and them telling their stories and talking about the legal ins and outs, et cetera, and what we can all do to be better.
Okay, cool.
What do you got?
So this would have been the perfect episode to shout out Shogun.
I know, but we can do a double shout out. There's no rules. We're the boss. It's our show.
I think we've shouted it out a couple of times already, so I don't think that's necessary. But
okay, fine.
But it's so good. Yeah, it's so good. Hmm. But I did want to shout out Fallout on Prime.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's based on the video game Fallout. Mm-hmm. It's set in an alternate reality after a nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
And the cast is diverse. And there's even a non-binary character.
Love it. Love it. I am going to be watching as soon as we're done recording, actually.
Nice. So,
tell my boss I won't be in tomorrow. Just kidding. So just to recap, those shout outs are a true crime podcast called Stop the Killing and also a podcast called Parallel Justice, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as Fallout on Prime. And sorry, y'all, Shogun is so good. We have to say it. and it looks like, that's the end of the show.
That's
but
it.
We're not gone forever. We'll be back. But in the meantime, Beth, where can the people find us?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show. Also, join us on Patreon, where we have literally hundreds of hours of bonus content. You can also support us by supporting our sponsors or by giving us a 5-star review.
Five stars only, please.
Also, don't forget to subscribe.
That's right. So listen, y'all, this is a weekly podcast and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there. I'm sweaty. One more sip.
Oh no.
Mm. Oh my God. where is the button?
Another
That's
one.
That's not it. Sorry about that. Here we go. Don't tell my boyfriend. It's not what he's made for. That's that Billie Eilish song, redone by a Black woman who has clearly spent a lot of time in the church choir. Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I just burped. Sorry. Makes me want some soup.
Yeah, me too. And I love soup so much. Ooh, I want to swim in it. I want to take a bath. That's how much I love soup.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry.
Wendy loves soup.
I love it so much. Like, I love Beyonce and soup. Almost the same.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That is nuts.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Fakuda. Fakuda.
It's like
Kazuko?
Barracuda.
Barracuda.
Fakuda.
Okay.
Fukuda.
Archipelago.
Archipelago.
I knew I was saying that wrong.
You're a good reader, not the best pronouncer, though.
Yonij.
That's amazing.
I want one. I want to disappear into the night.
Wow. No, that is mutual combat. And so nobody.
It sounds like a game.
It does.
Mutual combat.
It does. It's so I can't even get old Whitey to help me put away the dishes, let alone move a body. Ay, ay, ay. But I got on the wrong train and ended up in Kanazawa. Unquote.
A likely story.
I am just saying, I don't know why there isn't a movie yet about this case. Well, let's work on that, everybody. So if I haven't said this before, I'm going to say it again. I'm sure I've said it before, but I love doing every recording.
Aw. I can't stop.
What?
I can't stop.
You can't stop podcasting. You love podcasting
no,
that much?
I can't.
Wow.
I can't stop. Can't stop, won't stop.
Oh, Rockefeller Records. No, we don't want to do that. What are you talking about? You can't stop. You mean you like this too?
Yes.
Oh,
that's what I mean.
Okay. Is there a Beth translator around here? I don't understand what she's saying.
Beth is glitching again.
Yeah. Little help here. Google.
Sorry.
What is she saying?
I love podcasting is what I'm saying.
Okay. You know what, friend? I don't usually say this to you. You usually hurl this at me. You should go to sleep.
Okay.
You should get some sleep, friend. In the meantime, I'm going to get this audio in the drive, and I will see you on the internet streets, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, night-night. Love you. Bye. Love you, baby.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Paul Brandis introducing my podcast, Countdown to Dallas. It's a fascinating, in-depth look at the seemingly unconnected events that led to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's based on my book of the same title. In that book and in this podcast, I go all the way back to 1939 when Lee Harvey Oswald was born into a troubled and dysfunctional family. I'll follow his transient and often violent teenage years and young adulthood, painting a fuller picture of the man who would later become Kennedy's killer. I also take a look at events unfolding in that era like Cuba and Vietnam. And I'll unpack the conspiracy theories, too, not one of which has ever been conclusively proven. Subscribe to Countdown to Dallas at evergreenpodcasts.com or your favorite listening app, October 31st.